Tonight on Coast to Coast, the induction of after-death communications. Our special guest, Dr. Alan Botkin. Later on, we'll be joined by another guest as well, Henya Stromberg. So get ready for all of this in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Dr. Alan Botkin, a licensed clinical psychologist with more than 20 years of experience in treating patients who suffer from grief and traumatic loss. Well, he's made a groundbreaking discovery. He found as a result of experimenting with variations of a relatively new and very powerful psychological procedure called eye movement desensitization and reprocessing that he could reliably induce in his patients an experience that they believed was actual contact with the deceased person that they were grieving. Dr. Botkin's discovery, which he calls induced after-death communication or simply IADC, makes these experiences available to virtually everyone. His website linked up right now at coasttocoastam.com. We're going to talk about his work, Reconnections, the Induction of After-Death Communications in Clinical Practice. He's our guest back on Coast to Coast, Dr. Alan Botkin. Hello, doctor. How are you?
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Sure. My pleasure. Later on, we're going to bring in Henya as well, and I'll let you lead into that toward the half-hour mark tonight, Doctor. You know, this is an interesting series of events that you call IADC. Is anybody else involved in this, or is this groundbreaking here?
Well, it's groundbreaking in the sense that this procedure that I stumbled into is very unique in terms of the approach. I'm not the first to successfully induce after-death communications with any reliability. The first was Raymond Moody.
Yes.
And he described his work in his book Reunions and his psychomantium procedure.
All right, now tell me, how did you stumble into this?
Well, I was working at a VA hospital on a PTSD unit, that's post-traumatic stress disorder, with combat veterans who were suffering the psychological effects of their wars they participated in. And the work for us was very grueling for many years until this new therapy came out, eye movement desensitization and reprocessing, or EMDR. It came out in the early 90s, or it actually first came out in the late 80s. We began using it in the early 90s. And this EMDR was absolutely remarkable. It changed the way we did business. For the first time, we could actually help our patients find relief and take the reliving component out of the memory. In other words, people with traumatic memories, they not only remember what happened, they also relive what happened. And so if a trauma happened 30 years ago, when a person thinks about that, they not only remember it, but it feels like it's happening all over again.
Okay, but this is not hypnosis, right?
No, not at all. As a matter of fact, those who are trained in both hypnosis and EMDR actually think of the two as opposites. Hypnosis gets people in a relaxed, focused state, and it also increases suggestibility and so on. The brain waves are slower with hypnosis, and those brain changes increase suggestibility of the subject. EMDR, on the other hand, the brain waves are the same as waking consciousness. People are very alert throughout it. EMDR actually increases brain processing and promotes integration of various brain parts.
No.
Similar to what our brains do when we dream at night, when we experience rapid eye movement or REM sleep. And the discovery of EMDR seems to be that we can tap into that same mechanism, that same speedy processing that occurs during dream sleep. It's that increased processing during dreaming has been believed to cause our eyes to shift back and forth.
Well, what is it about the rapid eye movement, or as we call desensitization, that creates this experience? Is it working on the brain? What is it?
Well, that's a good point, and the answer is not simple. EMDR, while it increases this rapid processing and allows the brain to integrate traumatic memories, I began using it in a very different way about 10 years ago, and I started experimenting with it, and I started making a number of changes to it. I had no idea where my changes were leading me, but after a number of significant technical changes to the procedure, my patients began reporting these after-death communications.
Okay, let's get into the specifics, too. How did your patients come to you via this entire situation, the induction of after-death communications, or did you go seek them out?
Oh, no. I was working in a VA hospital,
right,
and I was working with PTSD patients from Korea, Vietnam, Desert Storm, even some World War II guys, and they came to see me to do trauma work. They were not seeking after-death communication.
Okay, all right, I understand. You know, I just got done taping a series on ghosts and spirits for sci-fi, which was the pilot portion of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got to tell you, the interest in the spirit world is absolutely staggering, Alan. I mean, it is. I think it's at an all-time high.
That's the way it seems to me.
Why? Do you think it's because people are so concerned about their dearly departed? Do you think it's because they're afraid of demons and possessions? Why do you think so many people are interested in this now?
Well, you know, I give a lot of credit to Raymond Moody and some of the early workers in the field of near-death experience. When those stories started to break and people started writing books and so on back in the 70s, I think that got a lot of people's interest. And the after-death communication experience was something that that followed and also became popular. But it became clear that a very large number of people were having experiences that they were convinced were true glimpses into the other side. And their stories were pretty remarkable and not easily explained away by modern science.
Okay, let's create a few examples, if you would, to give us a better perspective of how this works, what people see or feel when it's all done.
Okay. And,
all right.
The procedure, I always begin the procedure by using the eye movements to help people process their deep sadness, all right? And it's generally the sadness that people experience blocks them from being able to have an after-death communication. First of all, after-death communications are not at all rare, and they've been estimated to occur in 20% of in people. So one out of five people have already had an after-death communication.
All right, through this technique, or it just happens?
Just happens.
All right.
Spontaneously and randomly. Now, when I use this procedure with my patients, we first do a lot of work on, like I say, processing that deep sadness and other emotional issues that prevent one from having the experience. And then at the very end of my procedure, I use the eye movement to put a person in a state that I call the receptive mode, where they're just kind of open to anything that happens. As a matter of fact, that's how I originally discovered it. After making a number of changes to the eye movement procedure, I just gave people an extra set of eye movement. And when they closed their eyes, they would have the experience. And by the way, I just want to make it clear, people who have induced after-death communications, they're private experiences that people have with their eyes closed.
Hmm. Okay, let's assume, okay, I come in as a patient. What do you do with me?
Well, the very first thing I do is I take you through a fairly lengthy screening procedure to make sure that this procedure is appropriate for you. But the very first thing we would do would be to identify your primary loss, and then you would tell me the story. And after you get done telling me the story of your loss and this person and so on, I would use the eye movement while I would have you shift your eyes while focusing on your sadness associated with the loss.
Okay, now how do we do that?
Well, you're sitting in a chair in front of me, and I ask you simply just to get in touch with your sadness.
Mentally, I guess. We got to just concentrate.
Just allow yourself to feel that sadness. And then while you're feeling that sadness, I get your eyes shifting side to side in a particular rhythmic fashion.
How do you do that? We just do that with eye muscle, or do you have some kind of apparatus we have to follow?
There's a number of ways you can do it. You can just simply, I can, you know, wave my arm side to side when you focus on my fingers going back and forth. I have an arthritic shoulder, so I use a stick. A little easier for me to do.
Is this something, Alan, we should not do at home?
Yes, you should not do it at home because the eye movement, the good thing about it is that it's so powerful and really helps people process very painful things. The problem with eye movement or the potential side effects involve, most importantly, bringing up other distressing losses or traumas one has in one's life, bringing those up so inadvertently. So anytime that I work with somebody doing eye movement, I always need to get a good history first. In other words, somebody might want to come in and work on the death of their grandmother and have some significant sadness about that. But if they were in a terrible car accident 20 years prior, I'm going to be giving eye movement on the death of grandmother, and there's a real good chance we're going to pull up that accident. And that person then may begin to relive the accident. So if you're doing this on your own and you're trying to induce an ADC on yourself and you've got any other significant trauma in your life, there's an excellent chance that you're going to pull that up and end up in a very bad place. It should only be done by a competent professional who is trained in EMDR.
Right, which is very important because not a lot of them are.
Correct, although more and more professional therapists across the world now are getting EMDR trained, and it's becoming rapidly mainstreamed. The last I heard, there are 40,000 EMDR-trained professionals across the planet.
That's huge, I would think.
Yeah, it is. And there have been a number of scientific studies. I believe it's over 20 now, controlled scientific studies that all support the efficacy of EMDR.
So, where do we stand in this country as opposed to other countries in this field?
Well, I probably couldn't give you a really good answer on that. EMDR started here in the United States and first began to grow here. But it's also now very big in Europe and Australia and so on.
All right, now, so these people are put into this state. Do they actually communicate with the dead, or do they think they are in order to solve their grief?
Well, that's an excellent question. As a psychologist, my primary concern has always been on the healing that's associated with induced after-death communication. And I've chosen not to speculate or take a side on whether this is real or not real and so on. I don't want to get bogged down in those arguments. My primary focus is on healing patients. Although, people are very interested if there is any evidence, if we have any evidence that would, argue that these experiences are real or not real and so on.
You know, in some dreams, two people will say sometimes, you know, my gosh, we had the same dream. I mean, I had a dream I was in his. He had a dream that, he was in mine. You know, it was that kind of thing. Is that the same way with these? Do people share these feelings or these thoughts?
Actually, yes. And this is one of the most unusual or startling aspects of IADC. It began, this discovery, this part of it, was also discovered by a complete accident. When I was working at the VA hospital, I was inducing a patient, and I had a doctoral-level intern observing the procedure. And at one point, for some reason, he closed his eyes and gave himself eye movement. And I think at the time, if I remember right, he did it just to help himself relax a little bit. And what happened was, is he ended up eavesdropping in on my patient's ADC experience, and they had the exact same experience.
He popped right in.
He popped right in. Or actually, he wasn't in it, but he became an observer of the experience my patient was having.
Now, why is it so important for someone to have this communications? Is it closure? What is it?
Yes, it's closure. The real painful part of losing someone we love or care about is that it's a basic sense of disconnection from that person. It's a feeling that person's gone forever, and so on. When we lose somebody so important to us, you know, we lose a part of ourselves. You know, people say, I feel like there's a part of me missing now, and so on. What the after-death communication does is that it provides an experiential reconnection to the deceased, which does much to resolve that deep underlying sadness.
And if it works, it's probably well worth it, isn't it?
Yeah, and that is my primary concern, whether it works or not. And it works well, and it works wonderfully. And it really doesn't matter what people believe. I've worked with a large number of atheists and agnostics, and sometimes patients, when I introduce the procedure to some patients, they'll say, well, that's silly. It's not going to work on me. I don't believe in that stuff. And I ask them if they're willing to give it a try anyway, and they say, sure. And then when I take them through the procedure and they have the after-death communication experience, they're generally very surprised by it. And most of those people out of that atheist and agnostic group end up changing their beliefs.
What does science say about all this? Do they test this?
There are not well-controlled scientific studies that actually go after the issue, certainly whether these are real or not. But also, the IADC procedure is so new that it hasn't been adequately and completely scientifically studied yet. There, Professor Jan Holden at the University of North Texas and a number of her colleagues are about to undergo a series of research projects on IADC, and I'm very much looking forward to what they find. Hopefully other university departments across the country will pick it up as well. But that's going to be important for the development of IADC.
Tell me about Hanya. She's going to join us in a moment. Hanya Stromberg.
Hanya Stromberg is a social worker who lives in Albuquerque, New Mexico. She has had a practice there for a number of years. She came up to I train people from all over the country. They come to see me for training in the IADC procedure. And I should point out that I can only train people in IADC who are already EMDR trained. I don't train people in the EMDR part.
Okay.
But since IADC is an offshoot of EMDR, I require that they are trained in that first. But anyway, Hanya came up to Chicago to get trained with me some time ago. It might be a couple years ago, and she went back to Albuquerque and began using IADC in her practice, and she is one of the better therapists that I have trained in IADC. She's highly skilled, very good at it, particularly good at the IADC procedure, but she's also very interesting because I mentioned that people sometimes share the IADC experience. They have the exact same experience at the same time. I have trained a number of therapists, or a handful of therapists, who seem to be able to experience what their patients are experiencing. Hanya is certainly the best at this and does that more consistently than anybody else I know.
Okay, well, let's bring her in when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, I'm going to bring in Hanya Stromberg now to join us with Dr. Alan Botkin. Hanya has worked in a variety of mental hospitals and clinics. Her experience prior to working in private medical practice, and practice indeed includes involvement with hospice organizations, consultations to an alcoholism and crisis center, teaching at the Santa Fe College of Natural Medicine. In the late 1970s, she met Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, and two of Ms. Ross's associates. This gave her the support of her ideals of working with the dying, and from 1980 through August of this year, she's been involved in her own psychotherapy practice and has worked with many people helping them to find a way out of various forms of human misery, suffering, including intense grieving. In all of her therapy work, she has encouraged seeing the mystery behind the tribulations of life, supported the bereaved, the mourning, the traumatized, and the awareness of enduring bond between the living and the deceased, as she says, is a way toward healing their intense sadness and despair. Let's bring Hanya in now at Coast to Coast. Hello, Hanya. How are you?
Good evening, George.
Good to talk to
fine.
You. Now,
Hi, Hanya.
There you go. And I understand that you've retired from full-time psychotherapy practice, right, Hanya?
I retired from my practice this past August. That's due to my own health problem.
All right. Tell me your interest in the induction of after-death communications.
Well, I have always been very interested in death and dying. Since I was a child, I was born right after World War II in Poland, and it was a pledge to myself that I must understand death differently than the environment presented it to me. And the way it was presented to me, it was that death was horrific, and something in me disagreed with it. So this was a lifelong quest for me to understand death more. And so I have been involved with working with the dying, and had good fortune to meet Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, a couple of her associates. And something that I like to mention here that I'm not sure that how many people are aware of it, that Elizabeth was herself very, very interested in contacting the dead, the deceased, and she spent lots of energy doing that. Anyway, I have been an avid listener to Art Bell Show for the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe in 2002, I heard Dr. Al Batkin on Art Bell's show, and I was just trained in EMDR. My health at that time wasn't such that I could travel for training, but I dreamed of doing it.
Right.
And 2 years later, in March of 2004, I went to Chicago and trained with Al. And that has deeply, deeply enriched my life. And my work, I should say, I really piggybacked on Al's discovery and his tremendous work. I am tremendously in debt to Al for giving me this chance to work with people in deep grief and help them reconnect with the loved ones.
Well, your dream came true, Hanya. You were able to do this.
And that's right. Yes, indeed.
For so many people, if you create the thought, sometimes that happens. When you got involved in this kind of work with Dr. Botkin and his work, did you expect the results that you're now getting and that he's getting with patients, and that is giving them the ability to get closure in their life and also giving them the ability to possibly communicate with the dead?
Well, when I went to train with Al, I was very interested in it, and I had immediate sense of confidence and could sense the good heart in Al. However, that wouldn't have been enough. I asked Al to induce me to have an experience, and I did have the very powerful experience with my own mother. The experience was amazing to me in this way that I am basically a very visual person,
mm-hmm.
and in that experience I could feel my mother hugging me, kissing me, which was completely unexpected. And what I experienced also with my own clients, that the experience is almost always not what one expects when it happens. It's always wonderful, but it's also almost always surprising.
Well, Alan, go ahead.
That's an excellent point. And you know, that's one of the arguments, I think, that people aren't just making this up, imagining it, and it's not like just a wish fulfillment kind of thing. Because one of the hallmarks of the ADC experience is that people are very surprised by the content. It's very different from what they expect typically.
Yes, yes. And also something that I when I think of this experience as well, I am moved how much people are helped. But there is also to me, I am tickled as I remember these experiences because there is so much humor that occurs on the part of the deceased.
Yeah, give us an example, Hanya.
For example, we had a client that a woman came heartbroken after the death of her husband, mm-hmm. and she was just living because of her daughter. And she did see her husband, and one of the first things that she saw was the cat that he brought with him, the cat that she was not very fond of, and he always teased her with it. And so she was laughing about it. It seems that the deceased come also is very much with the personalities like they had when they were in the body.
So that doesn't change. If someone was happy and jovial,
yes,
chances are in the afterlife,
right,
they'll be the same.
That's, in my experience, very much the same, and that their beliefs seldom change either.
Well, what do you feel, Hanya, is the most important thing about this kind of therapy in your life?
In my life?
Yeah.
Or
what,
in other people's
well,
lives?
Well, in yours and other people, because you did go through it.
Okay. Well, for myself, I would say, let me, I rather speak for everyone as I see it, for everybody. It's the reconnection with somebody that person feels they have lost forever. And there's a sense that that life continues beyond physical death, that loss continues. So there is this visit, this reconnection that is so healing. And also what is so healing, I think that no matter what person believes, there is a sense that we are part of this one great awareness that really there is no disconnection between living and the dying. That it's almost as if the living were in the box of physicality, but life continues beyond it.
Okay, Ellen, in your opinion.
In my opinion.
Would you agree with what Hanya says?
Yes. You know, I'm sitting here listening to Hanya, and Hanya puts it so beautifully. Yeah, I agree. I agree 100%.
Is this, Ellen, for the living or the dead?
Well, actually, you know, we've done thousands of cases at this point, I and my trained colleague. And you know what? It seems to be for both.
I was going to say that, for both. Somehow it gives closure to the living, but it may also help that who has deceased.
Well, sometimes the deceased are experienced as having concern for pain they have caused in survivors. And guilt issues can be worked out, you know, really both ways. We have even IADC'd abusive parents who were then experienced in the ADC as coming across as being very aware of the pain they caused and very interested in trying to help or fix those who survived.
Does everyone, I'll go for you first, Alan, and then you, Hanya, the people that you have, I guess, witnessed, does everyone go through this kind of induction of after-death communications when they go through this eye movement, or do some people it just doesn't work?
Well, when we use the IADC procedure, our goal started working with IADC, my success rate was 98%.
Oh, that's huge.
I seriously thought I could induce just about everybody. And however, when I left the VA hospital and went into private practice, I found that my success rate dropped to about 70%. And I've probably thought more about that issue than any other issue to try to understand why it is I got that drop. And I think probably the main reason is that when I worked at the VA hospital, people came to see me to do trauma work, not to have the experience. But now in my private practice, people are coming to have the IADC experience. That makes it a little bit more difficult because people come excited about having the experience. I now get people who very much believe in this kind of stuff. The problem is beliefs and expectations, even if they're consistent with the experience, tend to get in the way, tend to block the experience. Because the very last part of the procedure, when the induction occurs, is I use the eye movement to enhance a receptive mode where people are just open to anything that happens.
How about you, Hanya? Did you ever get to a case where someone goes through this and they're sad or it doesn't work for them?
That the experience would not happen?
Mm-hmm. Or didn't happen?
I had out of probably between 50 and 60 cases that I have conducted, there were three cases that it did not happen at all. And I would say that 70% of the cases that's consistent with what Al presents are completely successful, and within the 30% are partial, but only three cases that there was completely no success.
Has anybody ever had a scary experience? I mean, something very strange happen?
Never in my practice.
Never. As a matter of fact, one of the points I make is that all induced after-death communication experiences are positive. In my favorite case, is I was inducing a patient who wanted to work on the loss of his brother. And when I took him through the procedure and then got to the end where I did the eye movement to induce the experience, when he closed his eyes, he immediately startled and opened his eyes and said there's a giant claw around his neck trying to kill him.
Jeez.
Well, I had had enough experience with IADC at that point that I was confident that he needed to go back and find out what that was. So he trusted me. And I gave him another set of eye movements, and he closed his eyes. And he then discovered that what that sensation was around his neck, it was his brother giving him a hug.
That was it?
That was it. And he misinterpreted that experience and, you know, put a negative twist on it. So there have been a couple occasions out of thousands of cases where at first, it may seem like something negative is about to happen or is happening, but when people go back, they find they misinterpret it. And so they're all positive, amazingly so.
Well, it sounds like a tremendous vehicle to help people. I mean, absolutely tremendous. How do they know who they're going to contact, though? What if someone has five dead relatives or five dead loved ones? How do they reach the one they want to?
Well, we generally start with the loss that's most distressing to the person. And then when the first part of the procedure is eye moving that deep sadness, and when we get to the end of it and we do the induction, it's interesting that the person that my client is interested in connecting with is always the one that's there. It's never somebody completely different. But if those five deceased people are all family and connected in that way, what often happens is we're just trying to induce one family member, and in the experience, the whole family shows up. That's not at all rare and actually fairly common.
Let me ask you, Hanya, you know, in your therapy sessions, were you different from some of the other people who've gone through training programs? Did you change or alter the techniques at all?
No. My technique is pretty much the same, as closely as I can follow what Al has taught me. So the technique is the same.
Yeah, you try to teach everyone the same, Al?
Yes. I played around with, different variations of the procedure for a number of years and was able to figure out what worked and what didn't work, so I kind of fine-tuned it over time.
So I would assume that just with this procedure, you would both believe that the afterlife does exist. Is that pretty correct? Pretty accurate?
I do.
I have my own personal beliefs. I'm always a little standoffish about that.
Really? Why?
Well, because I want to appeal to the largest audience I possibly can. You know, if I take a side and I say, well, these aren't real or these are real, then I'm likely to turn off maybe half the population. My primary goal is to get healing to people who need it. So kind of strategically, I have kind of sidestepped the broader philosophical issues.
Well, now, okay, this is interesting because the goal is to heal someone. I would guess, though you may, I'm sure you care, but I would guess that your primary care is for the patient.
Yes.
Just to make sure they feel better.
Right.
They act better. And whether they believe that they're talking or communicating with their dead one or not, the point is, if it makes them feel better, that's the key to most of this.
Yes. Yes. As I mentioned earlier in the show, it really doesn't matter what people believe beforehand. Atheists have the experience as readily as those who have the beliefs. But, it's interesting. A very high percentage of people who have the induced experience believe that it is spiritually authentic and real. But it's interesting that out of the small percentage who don't believe it's real, they say things, well, I think my brain just played a trick on me, that kind of thing. I just had this weird hallucination. Even though those people heal to the same degree. So beliefs, at least as far as my patients go, it really doesn't make any difference what they believe beforehand or even after the experience.
Okay, well, stay with us. Hanya, what's your schedule like? How long do you want to stay with us?
As long as you need me.
Okay, all right. We'll stay at least one more hour, and then, Alan, the final hour, we'll open up phone calls for you, okay? And we'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. With a big question, of course, is what's the proof? What's the evidence? How do we know this is happening? We'll be back. And welcome back this hour to Coast AM. I'm George Norrie. Dr. Ellen Botkin and Hanya Stromberg are guests this hour. Dr. Botkin, how about the evidence, the proof? We don't have anything physical that we can show people. So how do we know this is really happening?
Well, as I said earlier, I sort of sidestepped the issue in terms of my own final beliefs on the matter. But certainly there are some lines of evidence that are certainly highly suggestive that these experiences are in fact real. And I would say the very first one, and perhaps the most important, comes from experiencers themselves. There is something very convincing about the experience. As I said, a large percentage of the people I've worked with over the years come from are agnostic or even atheistic, and a large percentage of those people are absolutely convinced in the spiritual authenticity of the experience. I like to say that the only informed opinion on the matter of whether these are real or not come from people who have had the experience. Just as near-death experiencers no longer fear death, those who have induced after-death communications or the usual spontaneous after-death communications, they believe that their deceased loved one is really not gone, that they're still with them in some way.
How about you, Hanya? Let's get your take on this, the lack of definitive proof or evidence. What we're working on is a belief system and reaction from these patients.
Well, that's one thing. Another, that for myself, I have had the situation that from the first IADC client, with every IADC client, I have participated in the experience as well. That is, I have been aware of the deceased and often feeling, hearing, seeing deceased, and it has always matched what my clients experienced. I have never been part of the private information that my clients would receive. However, I would also have the experience of the deceased every time. Actually, I should say, I have experienced deceased even when my clients did not, when they could not have the communication, when that did not succeed for them.
Did you ever have a some kind of experience with the deceased who simply didn't want to communicate with another live person?
Yes, I had once.
What happened?
Okay, I need to give you a background of the story.
Okay, sure.
I need to ask you how to proceed here because...
all right, jump in, Alan. Help her out here.
What deceased has said is a four-letter word in it. So what should I do? Will you blip it out?
No, we can't blip it, so don't even say it. I think
I will change it.
Yeah, change. Okay. People probably already know what it is.
Okay, very good. So what happened
interesting
was...
Interesting spirit. Go ahead.
A mother came whose teenage daughter has died a violent death. And the teenage daughter was atheistic, did not believe in spirituality, religion, did not want to believe in it. And the mother came twice, and I could feel very strongly the presence of the daughter. And actually, there was a sense of agitation that the daughter had that I experienced. And of course, neither I tell my clients, I should say told, as I'm no longer in practice, neither I told my clients what I believed or my experiences, and I can explain later why. So the mother came second time, nothing. And usually I would feel the lingering presence for about a minute or so after the living would leave my office. So after the mother left without the experience the second time, I turned to the deceased and asked, so what's going on? Why didn't you come through to your mother? And she said, I don't believe in this nonsense. So even after... So here the deceased refused to communicate even though she was there, but she was true to her beliefs.
Yeah.
Well, Alan?
So even dying didn't convince her in the reality of the afterlife, huh?
Right. or she did not want to change her character, personality.
Mm-hmm.
The identity, I guess, with her beliefs.
Alan, will systems change, technology change that might make this even easier to do, to accomplish?
Well, like I said, I honed and fine-tuned this procedure over a number of years. It is certainly my hope that people I train, like Hanya and other IADC therapists, hopefully will improve it further. I really hope that happens.
Will other scientists jump on board, Dr. Botkin, and try to, perfect this even more, or at least to back it up?
Hopefully that will happen. You know, scientists are like other people in that they are pretty much, when it comes to the idea of the afterlife, people are fairly entrenched in their beliefs. And actually, I was somewhat concerned that when I went public with this, that I would get some criticism from my scientific and professional colleagues. And actually, that has not yet happened. I expect that that kind of criticism might be forthcoming at some point, but actually my colleagues have, professional people in the field have been extremely supportive of what I'm doing.
Is this like the alien abduction phenomena in that, you know, if you're a doctor or psychiatrist like the late Dr. John Mack was, that colleagues might belittle you, like you just said, you're not getting as badly handled as you would think?
Yeah, I am sure that there are professional people across the country who, when they hear about this, have a sort of a knee-jerk negative reaction. But like I say, I'm really overwhelmed by the amount of professional support I've received for this.
What about the possibility that this is a hallucination but is really not happening? Possible?
Well, I suppose it, yes, it is possible, and that hallucinations have not been completely ruled out. However, I would need to say that hallucinations are very different in just about every way from after-death communications. First of all, hallucinations typically have a negative content. They're a sign of a serious psychiatric disorder. Hallucinations vary considerably in content from person to person, and after-death communications are the direct opposite on each one of those. They are, the content is consistently positive. It happens with normal, healthy people. It's not a sign of a serious disorder, and ADC experiences are very consistent from person to person. So if ADCs are hallucinations, they're very different from any other hallucination we know about.
Did you look at this as a possibility as well, Hanya? Hallucinations?
Yes, and I will say that if I and my client are hallucinating together and our hallucination is congruent with each other, we each have congruent hallucination, then to me perhaps the whole life is a big hallucination.
Yeah. You know, Hanya's experiences of her shared experiences with her patients, and Hanya is not the only one to have these kind of experiences. Certainly, the shared IADC experience is the strongest argument that these are not hallucinations, because it's pretty absurd that two people would randomly and spontaneously have the exact same hallucination at the same time. If you have two people having the exact same experience, that's a very strong argument that what they are experiencing is something of objectively real.
If a human being is using the eye movement in order to induce this, what do you think a ghost or spirit might be using in order to come back or stay here? Anything? Is anything involved in what they do? Do they have to work at it?
Well, you know, Hanya, I'd like to hear what you think about that. But
okay, in my experiences, I had several times felt that the deceased wanted to come into my body. Actually, one time that I heard the deceased saying, "I want to come inside you."
To possess you?
Yes, and each time I said absolutely no. And so what are my thoughts about it? I certainly do not understand the mystery of it. But my thought is that perhaps they need some sort of a grounding, an anchor to communicate. It seems from these few experiences that I had with the deceased that they wanted to use my body. So that's my idea about it, that perhaps the ability to communicate has something to do with ability to ground oneself.
Do you think, though, that there could be some people that don't have that ability, can't fight it off when a spirit wants to possess?
I really do not know that.
How about that, Alan, with you?
Well, I don't know about that. I would like to add to what Hanya said that it is clear that the deceased generally want to come through. Hanya offered an example that's that was kind of rare, but many patients that I've induced told me after the experience that the deceased told them that they had been trying to come through for some time but couldn't, And I always interpreted that as being due to the psychological state of the survivor.
Hmm. Go ahead, Anya. I hear you ready to say something.
In my experience is that besides that one time which I have told you about, that the deceased are always eager, immensely eager to communicate.
Yeah.
And my feeling is that it is as much healing for the deceased as for the living, and the deceased want the healing immensely. They want to come through immensely. And it's we in the body that, for whatever reason, may be blocked to not to receive them.
Does the deceased haunt the person before, let's say, they come in for therapy? Is there any communication that way?
I am not aware. Either I don't understand the question, or I...
Well, I've worked with people who have come to, for the induced after-death communication, who already had spontaneous ADCs with the deceased, but they were, you know, brief and fleeting, and they wanted to develop that further, which we were then, in most cases, you know, able to do. But the, I'm not aware of any haunting in previous haunting in the sense that it was negative.
Right.
Okay, now once, let's say, the initial induction of the after-death of communication occurs, one time, does that end it with that particular entity or spirit? Or, you know, can you continue to go back more and more and more and deal with the same one?
You can go back, and you can continue to go back. As a matter of fact, once a person establishes that connection, you can pretty much go back at will at that point.
Are any of these people under drugs?
Which people? Clients?
Clients.
No. I mean, that's something that I definitely ask.
I mean, certainly nothing strong or powerful. You know, a number of my patients are on antidepressants.
I was going to say that because been a problem for them, right?
Pardon?
It's a problem for them, the fact that they can't communicate or get closure, let's say, prior to coming to see you.
Sure.
So I would guess they are on antidepressants.
Well, a portion of them are, because it gets to the point where their grief and sadness just kind of turns into more generalized depression.
Are you able, after this program, after this therapy, to get them off this stuff?
Well, as a matter of fact, sometimes if a person comes depressed, that can get in the way of the eye movement work that I do with them prior to the induction. So sometimes I even encourage patients to get on an antidepressant before coming to see me. And then I tell them, you know, after doing the work, they can make the decision of staying on the antidepressant or going off. They may not need it anymore.
Anya, how about you in your case? Do you
I would
see the
exactly
same thing?
The same, what Al has said. Exactly the same. Actually, one time I had a client that was not able to have the experience, and I was, the glow of the mother that he was calling upon was so strong in her presence, and I called Al what to do, and he asked me, is possibly the client depressed? And I said yes, and he suggested the client goes on antidepressant, and as soon as that kicked in, the client had experience.
Which is another example of how the state of mind of the patient can block the experience, whether it's overwhelming sadness or depression and so on. And that's always the first step in the IADC procedure is to work on those other things that are blocking the experience.
Okay, I don't want to take away from the spirit world now, but... any of your patients under this situation, this kind of therapy, ever talk about something else, maybe some kind of extraterrestrial visitation or something like that?
That hasn't happened with me, no, and I haven't heard of anything like that with other IADC therapy.
All right. How about you, Hanya?
Never, and I hope never to hear about it.
Okay, I'm very interested in the possession, Hanya, that you had talked about. It's obvious that there's something in the spirit world that isn't very benevolent.
Oh, I did not experience that as being anything negative. It was just I felt that the deceased tried to ground themselves, but it was nothing really that they were trying to do to me or to hurt me. And I did not want it to happen. I would not want it to happen. But the deceased just wanted to communicate and wanted to ground themselves. That was my feeling. But it was nothing negative on their part. That's not how I experienced it.
How about you, Alan? Anything, are we concerned about demons and possession when we dabble with this?
You know, I had somebody ask me once, you know, do evil spirits, you know, ever come through and that kind of thing? And the answer is no, that's never happened.
So far.
So far.
Well,
yeah.
May I say something?
Sure.
For me, when the experience begins, it's as if a portal, these are just words, I'm limited by words, vocabulary, as if a portal opens up and a palpable peace and exhilaration at the same time, love would come into the office. And then the deceased would come as well. And it's inconceivable for me that anything negative would happen, there would be no room for it. It comes on a wave of love. That's my experience.
All right, well, stay with us when we come back. I tell you what we'll do is we'll open up fast blast questions for Dr. Alan Botkin and Hanya Stromberg.
And George?
Yeah.
I'd like to get a chance to plug my book and website.
Absolutely. Let's do that when we come back, okay?
Okay, great.
So you get ready for that, and people by that time can get paper and pencil and write down some information on that, because you have put a lot of work into this, Alan. So we'll be back on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, what we'll do is fast blast questions now for both our guests, Dr. Alan Botkin and Hanya Stromberg. In the next hour, Dr. Botkin will stay with us. We'll take your phone call. So that's all next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie with our guests, like I mentioned, Dr. Alan Botkin, Hanya Stromberg, and your fast blast questions. Would you give us your website, Alan, in the book, where it's available?
Okay. My book is entitled Induced After-Death Communication, A New Therapy for Healing Grief and Trauma. Hampton Roads published it in September 2005. The book is available on Amazon, or you can get it on the Hampton Roads website at hrpub.com. I also want to mention my website, which is inducedadc.com. It also works induced-adc.com. And so people who are interested in the treatment or EMDR therapists interested in getting training will find information about both those things on the website. I also want to say that after the last few Coast to Coast shows I did, I was swamped with emails and phone calls.
Right.
So please, please be patient the next week or two if you want to get through but have some difficulty doing that.
You'll get to everybody eventually.
Yeah, I will. I'm very good about answering all my emails and keeping up with my calls. It's just that it might be difficult for a week or two. The other thing I want to say is a huge percentage of my emails over the years, people have asked if there are IADC-trained therapists near them. And IADC is very new, so there are not a lot of them out there yet. There are about 14 or 15 or so listed on my website. But those are the only ones that are available as of now. And I'm in the process of training more people, and hopefully there will be IADC-trained therapists close to everyone. But for now, that's not the case. So those that are available are on the website.
Okay, let's go to the first fast blast from John in Austin, Texas, where I'll be on January 27th, by the way. Does this work with grieving because of deceased pets? Fascinating question. You first, Alan.
The answer is yes. have I've done IADC work with people who have lost both dogs and cats, and dogs and cats show up in IADCs just like people do. Of course, that kind of begs the question, and people often ask, well, or what about hamsters and birds and, you know, what about worms and mosquitoes?
Yeah, or goldfish or something.
I have no idea. I have no idea about those, about that. But cats and dogs have been in IADCs, yes.
How about you, Hanya? Have you come across any animal situation?
Yes, exactly.
Give us an example. What happened?
And dogs. And actually, one of my clients that was connecting with the dog that he lost opened his eyes and could still feel, see the dog. So occasionally IADCs happen also with opened eyes, and that was the time. So dogs and cats just as much as humans.
From Edmonton, California, Paul writes, could a person benefit from spirit possession by hanging around a benevolent, highly intelligent, or otherwise worthy person just before they're ready to die, let's say? That's an interesting question.
Hmm. That one's all yours, Hanya.
I have no idea. I have no idea. I really don't know much about spirit possessions.
All right, here's another one from Toppy in Tucson, Arizona. What about a deceased parent that you never knew in real life, like a father? Can you communicate with them?
The answer is yes.
And I assume that helps somebody in more than one way then. Not only do they communicate with the deceased, but they also communicate with a parent they never knew.
Correct.
And that gets to be pretty difficult for most people.
Right.
Yes, right. Exactly.
You know, of all the work that you've done in this arena, what for you, Alan, has been the most satisfying?
Without the answer to that one is really easy. It's it's seeing the difference in people after the treatment. I work with people. I started out working with patients with horrible combat losses and occurred under tragic, you know, horrible circumstances. And now I work with, you know, parents who lose children and just, you know, a spouse after, you know, 40 years of marriage. And the sadness is so profound and it's so deep. But to see those people feel an overwhelming sense of relief and even joy after our sessions is most gratifying to me.
How about patients who need to contact their children who may have passed on? Does that work?
Yes. I've done quite a bit of that lately. That works just as well, sure.
All right. So
there doesn't seem to be any limit to who can be induced and who can't.
What about time? What if too much time has gone by? Does that have any effect?
Well, you know, that's a question I get a lot because a lot of people who believe in reincarnation, you know, ask if after a certain amount of time that the person is no longer available on the other side, you know, meaning that they've reincarnated into a different body or something. And the answer to that is no, there doesn't seem to be any limit. As a matter of fact, I worked with somebody about 6 or 7 months ago who communicated with a deceased person that had been dead 74 years.
My God.
That is my record. That's the longest. I don't know. I've heard people who believe in reincarnation, you know, have an explanation for that, and I don't know that much about it to really but they're still there. And the amount of time that, since the person died seems to be of no consequence.
I'm beginning to think that mediums, good ones, real ones, may be using this technique to contact dead and the dearly departed. What do you think?
Well, you know, if you would have asked me about my opinion of mediums 10 years ago, I would have just laughed it off, but given the fact that my patients have these experiences all the time, it certainly makes some sense to me that mediums could do that as well. And whether it's Hanya having a shared experience, or, and certainly shared experiences in general certainly suggest that what mediums do, you know, may in fact be valid. What's interesting is that EMDR, which is the core of my procedure, it involves bilateral stimulation. It can be the movement of the eyes left or right. It also works with earphones with alternating clicks, alternating hand taps, so it can be tactile as well. But any kind of bilateral stimulation seems to work. What's interesting, if you watch some of these mediums work, some of the good ones, they appear to be giving themselves some sort of bilateral stimulation. Jonathan Edward, from time to time, he appears to look to the to one side when he's doing a reading, and it looks like he might be moving his eyes.
Yeah, I noticed that too.
And I think it's James von Prague or George Anderson. I think both of them, when they do a reading, they sit with a piece of paper or clipboard on their lap, and they do sideways, side-to-side movement with a pen.
With a pen?
Yeah, like they're writing, but they're just kind of scribbling, and they're moving their hand left to right, while they're doing a reading. It may be that mediums are able to do what they do because for the same reason that my patients are able to have the experience, they involve some kind of bilateral stimulation that that helps produce the experience.
So, Hanya, with all this, and you know, you're retired primarily. I mean, do you do this? Do you dabble at all in this area, or are you done with it?
I'm very interested in this area. But I don't know what you mean by dabbling in this.
I mean, do you still do this? Do you still perform therapy on people?
No, unfortunately, I don't feel quite up to it at this point.
You're done now. Well, yeah, but you paid your dues, I guess. You help people.
Help quite a few people.
And that's the important thing. How long does it take to go through the program, Alan?
For
training.
For training, it's
and again, you have to also be trained, like you said already,
in the EMDR part of it.
Right.
Yeah. What I do is I generally see trainees for I usually see them individually, although I've done small groups, and it's an all day training. It's about an 8-hour day.
Well, that's not bad.
No. No.
I thought it would go on for weeks or something like
that. Oh, no. We can pretty much get it done in one day. And then the people I train, though, I remain available to them for follow-up, you know, to kind of help them get started, you know, over the phone, that kind of
What's
thing.
What's the criteria for someone who's good at what they do like this or not? How do you know?
Well, boy, that's a, you know, I could probably talk an hour about that. But generally, people who stick to the IADC protocol without kind of watering it down or mixing it with other therapies, if they really stick to the steps that are involved, they're generally successful.
Michelle from Vancouver, British Columbia says, what's the most common question or problem that people come to see you for? Is there one question that is the most frequently asked? Is there one?
Well, yeah, specifically when people come to see me for IADC therapy, I would say the most frequent issue or question they have is my loved one okay?
So that's what they want to know. They want to know if they're okay. They don't want to know what they've done, whether they've passed on. They're more interested in if they're okay.
If the deceased is okay.
And can you help that?
Well, actually, yes, because the primary message then in IADCs is I'm okay. So they generally get what they want.
I mean, has a deceased ever told the loved one I'm not okay?
No,
never.
Why not? Now that would seem beyond, you know, probability. you would think one or two of these spirits would admit things aren't as good as I thought they would be.
Well, intuitively, one might expect that. The only thing I can tell you is out of the thousands of IADCs we've done, we've never had that.
So, Hanya, in all your experience when you were doing a lot of these, you didn't stop. Did you ever get scared of doing what you were doing, or you just kept moving forward?
Oh, there was nothing to be scared of. It was exhilarating.
Because these aren't like exorcisms, right?
I'm sorry?
These aren't like exorcisms.
Oh, no, not at all. And to see people who come broken by grief and leave peaceful or sometimes so happy that they are leaving giddy, there's just a positive, most positive, rewarding situation.
Is there need for retraining these people? I mean, do they come back and you have to do this again?
You don't have to do, but sometimes I had situations that people wanted to come back for another visit with the deceased, or I had situations that the deceased said on a number of occasions that they are busy, that they have to go now and to come back, to come next time.
Okay, now, Alan, though this isn't a hypnosis, as we talked about, it is pretty similar in that, you know, there's a back-and-forth movement involved here, right?
Mm-hmm.
The back and forth, the bilateral stimulation is a crucial element of the eye movement, the EMDR procedure.
And again, that's side to side primarily?
Yes. Now, you know, I'm old enough to remember stage hypnosis where somebody would, you know, dangle a pocket watch in front of somebody's face and
sure.
They'd get hypnotized. You know, generally that technique is not used anymore for hypnosis. And on the surface of it, it would seem that perhaps hypnosis and EMDR or IADC, you know, involves the same processing, but it actually doesn't. You know, brainwave studies show they're very different and so on.
How far back has someone talked to a spirit? I mean, what, in your opinion, what has been the longest trip back? 10 years, 50 years of a spirit?
You mean since the deceased has passed?
No, I mean the communication in general. I mean, does somebody, for example, communicate with somebody who died in the Civil War, for example?
Oh, I see what you're saying. That would be interesting, but we haven't done anything like that.
But can be?
Because generally the people I see are very interested in...
Who they know.
With people they've known and lost. Yeah.
But it would be fascinating to find out if you can go back that far.
Well, there's probably a lot of potential with this procedure that we haven't yet experimented with yet.
It's almost like mental time travel in that, you know, you induce, again, with the eye movement, allowing people to do whatever they need to do through this this medium.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Hanya, you know, as we get to the end here, we're going to let you go soon, and then we're going to keep Dr. Botkin for phone calls. We're going to open up all the phone banks in just a few seconds. I want to thank you for being on the program and leaving. What can you tell people about all of this? I mean, why is this so important to people, Hanya?
Well, I think that grief is one of the greatest sufferings that human beings have endured, and this method can help millions, can heal millions. So it's the healing is most important.
And you find results immediately?
Yes, yes.
Well, Alan, by stumbling, I guess, into this, you've helped a lot of people, huh?
Well, yes, he did.
He did. We're going to have to call him back because he has...
disconnect.
He has departed. And we're going to try our own form of communication, Hanya,
okay,
to get back to him. But
thank you,
but we will. Thank you, too. And let me ask you this in parting. I mean, you've given this up now. You're not doing it as a profession. Do you do it to people who need your help? I mean, what if your neighbor comes by?
I would
says,
consider it.
Yeah.
Of course.
And again, you stopped it primarily because of your own personal reasons.
Right.
Not because you don't believe in it.
Oh, no. Oh, no. No.
All right. Thanks very much, Anya.
You're welcome, George.
Appreciate you being on Coast to Coast as well. And we'll connect with Dr. Botkin next hour to get him back on the phone lines, and we'll take your questions as well. Maybe still continue to take your fast blasts. As he mentioned, his website is induced-adc.com. It's linked up at coasttocoastam.com. His work, his book that we're talking about is called Reconnections, the Induction of After-Death Communications and Clinical Practice. It's available right now, so take advantage of that if you would. And during the week, we've got a whole listing of great programs for you as well, beginning tomorrow again with Alex Jones to talk about some things that have been going on around this world, on this planet. And you know, Alex, as I call him the bulldog, he simply does not hold back. So we'll be back in just a second right here on Coast to Coast AM. And again, thank you to all of you who came by and witnessed the sci-fi tapings of the two pilots that we did. Thank you so very much. We had well over 100, maybe 200 people. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM with Dr. Alan Botkin and your phone calls. Don't go away. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie with Dr. Alan Botkin and your phone calls. Let's take some calls right now. Alan, you ready? Let's pick him up there, Mr. Botkin. There you go. Wildcard line, you're on the line with us. Hi there.
Hi, is George?
Yeah.
Hi, George. This is Julia. I'm calling you from Camarillo, California.
Great.
My question for Dr. Botkin is this. When my mother died, she had advanced Alzheimer's, and I was wondering if I was able to contact her with that method, if what condition her mind would be in. Would she be still the same?
I have a good answer for that, and that is every time that we have induced an after-death communication with somebody who was ill or had a severe disability or and so on, when they were experienced in the ADC, the deceased were always experienced as completely healthy.
Oh, that makes me feel good.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And they're also experienced as most often younger. So people who die old and sick are always experienced as younger and healthy and completely healthy.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that? Why do they look younger and healthier?
Well, if these experiences are real spirit communications, then this information would suggest that the spirit stays young and healthy. It's just the body that gets old and sick.
Next up, let's go to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hello.
Yeah, hi. Welcome to the program. Good to
not
have you
bad.
With us.
I'm not too bad. How are you tonight?
Good. Thank you.
I'd like to ask the doctor, can an event in your life hook you up psychically in a biblical sense?
I'm not sure what you mean.
Rephrase that a little bit.
Psychically in a biblical sense?
Yeah, well, I had an event in my life that I like astral travel, I guess, back into biblical times. And this has been happening over and over and over again.
Wow. You know, I know there's a whole body of research that includes out-of-body experiences and that kind of astral travel kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
I am not expert in that and actually know very little about it. I do know Paul Elder wrote a wonderful book, Eyes of an Angel, also published by Hampton Roads, and that's a topic he's very familiar with and writes about.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right. Sorry, couldn't help you a lot, but we did the best we could on that
one. You know, George, I thought of adding something to a prior discussion we had.
You all right?
You know, we're talking about, you know, what kind of evidence is there, pro or con, that these experiences are real.
Yes.
And so, you know, another question I get quite a lot is, how do you know these aren't just a product of imagination?
That's true. How do you?
Well, first of all, one of the hallmarks of the ADC experience is that they always come as a surprise to people, the actual content of the experience. It's never quite what people expect. If the experience was based just on imagination or wishful thinking, people would not be surprised. As a matter of fact, there are a number of ADCs that I've done where people didn't even understand the message, or they even disagreed with it. So, I mean, it's very difficult to think that someone imagines getting a message that they don't even understand. And, and my favorite example of that is I was working with a guy who was doing an ADC with his father. And at one point in his ADC, he asked his father for advice on what he should do with his life. Well, he got the advice and he opened his eyes and told me what his father had said, which was, use your tools. And he looked at me in a real perplexed kind of way, and he said, I don't know why my father would say that. My tools have been in the back of my garage for 20 years, and I've lost my skills, and I don't think I could go back to that. Why would he tell me to use my tools? And, of course, I said, I don't know. Why don't you ask him? So I induced the experience again, and he went back, and he sat there for a while. When he opened his eyes, he said his father explained it to him, that what he meant by use your tools, he meant use the tools you're learning in therapy.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's those kind of experiences that argue against that people are just imagining this stuff or just making it up. There's and sometimes they even disagree with the advice they get from the deceased. I worked with one guy who... he was working on the death of his son. His son had been murdered.
Oh, God.
And he had a wonderful ADC with his son. But when his son was killed, my patient and his wife then went through a divorce. And part of the divorce had to do with the fact that my patient blamed his wife for the death of their son.
Sure.
But anyway, in the ADC, the son told my patient that he should get back together with his wife, or his mother, the deceased's mother. And when he opened his eyes and told me what his experience was, he says, you know, that was really wonderful, so on. I feel so much better. He said, but my son told me that I should get back to my wife. He said, there's no way I'm going to do that.
Yeah. Okay, next up, East of the Rockies, you're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, this is Michael in Norfolk, Virginia.
Oh, Michael, thanks for calling.
Hi.
Thank you. Dr. Botkin, I remember a year or two ago when you were on with Ian Punnett,
mm-hmm.
you were asked if you would be willing to participate in a Coast to Coast panel discussing these issues with your peers, and you said yes. And unfortunately, that hasn't come about, and I think that's really unfortunate in view of the fact that George and his crew have done so well with the Kennedy assassination about using these panels. And this is a critically, critically important area that you're getting into. Years ago, psychologists used to tell us that anyone who had such a strong desire to get in touch with a deceased person, that they would be willing to go to a medium to do it, was in dangerous denial of reality. Now, you say that some 40,000 therapists since the early 1990s have now gotten into this business, which sounds absolutely no different from mediumship.
Well, okay. First of all, the 40,000 are people who are EMDR trained, not IADC trained.
Yeah, I understand. I understand. But I'm just saying that with the trend going where it is, we need a peer review on something like this. Now, George raised some very important questions earlier in the program.
Mm-hmm.
He talked about aliens. He talked about demons. He talked about other spirits.
Mm-hmm.
He talked about hallucinations and the relationship to drugs that produce these experiences.
Mm-hmm.
He's asking a lot of good questions,
Yes, he is.
But really, this kind of format where you don't have a peer review panel banging these things out for 2 or 3 days in a row on Coast to Coast, this is dangerous because we got a lot of people that are leaving your fellow therapists and trying this stuff on their own. Now, we have churches that are practicing a similar thing. If you want to have a good parallel, they're inviting illegal aliens to come into this country. How do you know, in reaching out to the spirit world, you're not inviting some other kind of aliens into this country?
Well, I have a couple responses. I mean, first of all, you know, a lot of questions George asked me were very good, intelligent questions. I know a lot about some things, but not so much about other things. So when George asked me a good question and I don't have a good answer, I pretty much just have to say I don't know.
That's why we need a panel.
Right.
That's why we need peer review.
How do I get involved in one of these panels?
We can't play with this like it's nothing, like it's meaningless, like it doesn't count. I heard Pat Buchanan say he comes on right after this show in this local WNIS Norfolk area. I heard him say after Art Bell went off last night in an interview with Jim Bohannon that we've never had in history an invasion like we are having in the United States. We've had three times as many illegal invaders come into this country as went into Europe during both World War I and World War II to try to put down the trouble over there. This is unprecedented. Now, you people are calling in spirits that you admittedly don't understand or calling in some forces that you don't know what you're dealing with. And we have plenty of people that have come on this program that have told us, yeah, there are beings out there to worry about. And we have the record of the scriptures that tell us, hey, things are going to build up in the end so that the devil is going to come down to you having great wrath. Well, listen, maybe you and your fellow therapists are inviting them in. The Bible says that to seek the dead is to call in these demons. Now, why shouldn't we take that seriously?
Well, the only thing I can say is that, as we discussed earlier on the show, that all of the inductions we have done have all been very positive, loving, and healing. I just simply have no evidence, or there's no reason for me to believe that we're calling in anything negative or demonic or anything.
Okay, let's move on to a couple more calls. This hour's flying by. West of the Rockies, welcome to Coast to Coast. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, yeah, this is Vernon Snow of Costa Mesa.
Hey, Vernon, go ahead.
Hi.
Hi. I have a question. My grandfather was in World War II. He was a German Marine. And if I wanted to contact him, would there be like a little problem? My mother and the rest of my family are from Germany. But I don't speak the language that well. Would there be a problem if I contact him?
You mean in terms of language?
Yeah. I don't know if he speaks English yet.
That is an excellent question, and I get asked something similar quite often. I have worked with many people who have ADC, deceased people, who did speak a different language, and I did that a number of many times. When working with combat veterans with PTSD who were in Vietnam, and they would ADC even enemy soldiers that they had killed, and the enemy soldiers only spoke Vietnamese. What's interesting is that in the experience, people don't describe hearing a different language. What they describe is like the communication is more on a telepathic kind of automatic level, where they feel like, you know, the thoughts are being directly put in their head. So actually, believe it or not, there are no language barriers.
Oh, great. Well, thank you. I'm just real interested in him. I heard he's a wonderful guy, so I just only wanted to know who he is.
Yeah, yeah. That's certainly possible with this.
Alan, if people want information about doctors or psychologists who are part of the program, they find it off your website. How do they move on?
All of the available IADC therapists are listed on the website with their town and state and contact information. And I encourage people to go to the website. Again, it's induceadc.com, and to find if there's an IADC therapist near you, and simply contact that person and set up an appointment.
Okay, next up, first-time caller line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Oh, hi. Hi, George. How are you?
Good.
Yeah, this is Gary from California.
Mm-hmm. Hi, Gary.
Hi, how are you? Anyway, my question is, have you had any experience with people wanting to contact loved ones that passed away as a result of suicide?
Yes.
Was there any difference with that or any kind of information you can explain about that?
Yes. I have done a number of cases where the deceased had suicided. And what's interesting is that Hanya and I were talking earlier about these experiences seem to be beneficial to both survivors and the deceased. That's the way they're reported.
Uh-huh.
And people who suicide are oftentimes, or most oftentimes, very concerned about the pain that their suicide caused in others.
Okay.
And those kinds of issues as well, you know, and, you know, generally survivors, if you're a parent and your child suicides, there's usually a tremendous amount of guilt associated with that. Like,
yeah.
You know, I should have seen it coming. I should have been able to stop it. You know, what did I do wrong? That kind of thing. But those kind of issues get addressed and worked on in the experience.
And does it end up being a positive experience for the person who comes to you to them?
Yes. So far, they've all been positive.
Okay.
I did have one case. I have to be honest. You know, this therapy works nearly all the time. Even when people do not have the ADC experience, which occurs in a low percentage, they still are managed to work through their sadness and feel a great deal of relief at the end. I did have a case recently. Of course, I won't mention any names or locations, but she came in and she had a family member who had suicided, and we were not successful. And I think the reason is she was so overwhelmed by guilt that it was difficult for me to do the procedure, because the procedure requires that I do the eye movements on her sadness. And she was a little bit out of touch with her sadness because of her overwhelming guilt. And that was one case that didn't turn out so well.
Okay. All right.
But
okay,
but in all other cases of where the deceased had suicided, people are able to achieve closure and some peace of mind.
You know, it's also interesting, Alan, as we get to the holiday season, people are more and more interested in this as well, that connection of trying to stay in touch with a departed one.
Right. You know, Thanksgiving and the winter holidays and so forth, those situations can certainly trigger memories of deceased family members and so on, and it's times are remembered when the deceased were there enjoying those times with the family and so on. And when they're not there, holidays can be very difficult.
Do you think religious people would accept this, what you're doing?
Well, actually, yes. Most of the religious people I've talked to, and in fact, I even talked to, I'm not Catholic myself, but I had the opportunity to talk to a Catholic bishop, and I won't mention his name because I didn't, I don't think he wants to make this, what he said, a public statement. But I asked him, I said, there are some religious groups that think, as this previous caller mentioned, that this is somehow the work of the devil, and which was always difficult for me to believe because these are so loving and healing. But the Catholic bishop said that this is very consistent with the Bible, This is what the Bible's been saying to all of us for a long time, the idea of an afterlife and so on.
All right, well, stay with us, Alan. We'll be back. We'll take final phone calls in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. You know, I guess, Alan, we can assemble a group of panelists to talk about what Michael from Norfolk wanted us to do. But, you know, I think it might even be a better program if we add a skeptic in there, someone who doesn't believe it, as well as a number of people who do. What do you think?
Oh, sure. That would make it much more complete. Sure.
I think so, too. Let's go to the phones. Wildcard line, you're on Coast to Coast. It's your turn. Hi there.
Hi. This is Nancy from Canoga Park, California.
Oh, Nancy, go ahead.
Hi.
This is a question for the doctor. I'd just like to know if it's possible to contact a relative that I never knew, such as a great-grandfather?
Yes, that is possible, and I have done a few cases like that, yeah.
I see. And even if the person, there's no written record that they even existed, but yet the family knows that he did.
Well, if he existed, then he can be ADC'd.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay. Appreciate you calling the program. Let's move on to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, George. Hi. My name's Christine from Valley Springs, California.
Okay.
And hi, Dr. Bowden, is that it?
Botkin.
Botkin?
Close. Mm-hmm.
Okay, hi.
Hi.
This is a really interesting subject, and I could have a ton of questions for you, but I know I got to narrow it down to my most important one. It was really interesting to hear your answer when the guy called about the different languages that he still could understand. Mm-hmm. They could still communicate because it was telepathic, and that partly answers my question about the animals. I had been suffering for about 6 years, and I appreciate that you guys don't laugh at what anyone want,
nope,
might not consider as dumb questions, because my cat died, and I've been suffering ever since. And I was wanting to know if you could get very specific and tell us, you know, about a patient's experience. Now, I know you don't have to use their names, of course, so
mm-hmm,
if you can tell us more specifically, like, you know, especially when it comes to animals, like, did the animals tell them that they're okay and that, you know, they'll see them again, or, you know,
well, okay,
give me some peace of mind here.
Okay. My experience, and I haven't done a lot of pets.
Uh-huh.
You know, I have maybe 10 or 15 cases, something like that.
Okay.
In each case, dogs were experienced as still dogs, and cats were experienced as still cats. In other words, they weren't speaking English suddenly.
Right. But telepathically, I bet, you know, because you can understand when someone's speaking a different language. I just put that together as, well, I wondered, you know, if they can understand what their beloved pet is
well,
feeling.
You know, in fact, I even think of one that's in my book. My co-author had an experience with an IADC with his cat.
Tell me about it.
Oh, when he experienced the cat, he experienced the cat purring and rubbing his face on my co-author's chin.
Oh.
And so it was, now, there weren't any words involved,
mm-hmm,
but the message was clear. It was that the cat's love for this, for Craig, continued.
And that he was okay.
Yeah, and that he was purring. He was fine.
Do you ever get a sense of, like, where they're at, what kind of surroundings they're in? You know, like if it's green grass and sunny days.
Oh, yes. That's a very good question. The surroundings are very earth-like. In other words, there are trees, bushes, flowers, plants.
Oh, good.
except people describe those landscape scenes as more beautiful than earthly landscapes.
I would hope so. Yeah.
And they say, you know, it's a, you know, I see a forest and bushes and trees and you know, it's just like here on Earth, except it's much more beautiful. The plants and so on seem to radiate light, and it's just very comforting, that place, wherever that is. It reminds me of one guy I was working with, and he found himself in a strawberry patch. And he said, "You're not going to believe this, but those strawberries were the size of a cantaloupe, and they were the deepest red I have ever. I've never seen a red that deep on Earth." So things, it's very Earth-like, but very beautiful.
It sounds like you're not afraid to die.
Me?
Yeah.
Correct.
I'm not saying you want to. I'm just saying you don't. You're not afraid to.
No, not really. In fact, on some level, I look forward to it. I'm not in any hurry, but no, I'm not.
All right, next up, let's go to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hi, George, and hi, Dr. Alan Bakken, I believe it is.
Correct.
I have a couple questions to ask. I'm a combat force recon Marine. George, I think you know who I am in Cheney, Washington.
Oh, yeah,
the man with
sure,
the
Joseph, sure, sure do.
I'm working hard at writing a book concerning PTSD because I've been diagnosed with it as being probably the worst case in the state of Washington, and I've progressed really well over 14 years.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm curious, where have you practiced at, and what have you written about it, where I can find out information?
Well, my book, and I have a lot of combat cases in my book. My book is Induced After Death Communication, A New Therapy for Healing Grief and Trauma. And IADCs are used with, can be used successfully with cases of severe trauma as well.
Okay.
And I would say anybody with PTSD, the treatment of choice is EMDR.
Well, I like
which is the more basic form of what I do. And you can get an EMDR therapist near you by going to EMDR.com.
Yeah, I do real well with one-on-one with a psychiatrist. I mean, I've been
great.
Working hard for 14 years with her, and I'm not using any medications or...
Well, good for you.
It's been hard work on my part and on the good Lord's part, too. I think, Mr. Norrie, I would be a man that you'd want on that panel in disagreement because I'm also very knowledgeable of the Bible.
Right.
I don't go to church every Sunday. I go to what's called a cowboy church up in this neck of the world, and we study the Bible, but it is very explicit about God telling us not to communicate with the dead. And then I'll take that a step further. I have a lot of Native American friends all throughout this state, all through Arizona, the Hopi, many, many, many connections in my networking as a law enforcement officer retired. And they talk many, many times we've got into the conversations about the spirit world and how that people only with strong, strong personalities need even indeed go there if they want to open Pandora's box, that is.
I did work with a Native American combat vet, and when I explained my IADC procedure to him, he was somewhat hesitant to do it because his elders had taught him that when somebody dies, the spirit divides into two parts, the good and the bad, and that only the bad can be reached or communicated with. And so he was concerned that he would experience something negative. But his ADC went just like everyone else's, and he had a positive, loving experience.
All right, Joe, thanks for your call. We've got a few more callers lining up here with not enough time. West of the Rockies, welcome to the show. Hi there.
This is Judy.
Hey, Judy.
Hi, Judy.
And I'm in an 18-wheeler in Southern Kansas right now. And thank you for taking my call,
George. Sure thing, Judy.
Wonderful show tonight. And my question to the doctor is, earlier someone had asked about being able to contact children. And my question is it possible to contact preemies, babies, do they continue growing after we've deceased?
Yes. It's interesting that the people who died when they were old and very sick are always seen as younger and healthier. It's very interesting that children who die very young, sometimes at childbirth and so on, in their IADC, sometimes the child is much older and they come through as if they have grown on the other side. And with in other experiences, they seem to have stayed younger or stayed young. So there's more variability in terms of working with children who died very young.
Well, thank you. I appreciate your answer.
Okay, likewise. Next up, East of the Rockies, you're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hey, Mr. Norrie and Dr. Bolkin.
Hello.
Hi. Good evening. I believe 90% of what you guys are saying, and I caught this kind of late, but Dr. Bolkin, I'd love to get with you about some of my theories, but I'm responding to a caller from the last hour the guy who went long-winded, who suggested he went off on the religious rant. Don't get me wrong. I've been studying all about end times for the last 20 years, but it has been my serious personal experience that the suggestions in my life to change myself has come when I've been smoking marijuana, and it hasn't been like a division kind of split personality kind of thing, but there has been something that has been locked that just looks at me and says, what are you doing, man? What are you doing? Come on. This is what you've got to do better. And I'm just wondering if some of these things that could be construed as something from the other side telling us to do something and change ourselves and change our lives is not really just ourselves telling ourselves, hidden deeply within ourselves that we can't see normally, that just comes out and says, look, this is wrong. You're screwed up, and this is how you're screwed up, and this is how you need to change it. Get it done. Come on.
Yeah. You know, there are a lot of different possible theories for this, and I would love to discuss them with you as well. Another part that we haven't really mentioned when we talk about, when we ask the question, is there evidence that these are real or not real and so on? I've done no formal studies, and I know of no one who has, that really addressed the concept of new information that comes through in an IADC. But all the bits and pieces that we have gotten over the years, anytime we got a new bit of information, it always turned out to be true, and the experiencer was not aware of it. There have been times where deceased people have shown up in ADCs, and my patient said, "What's he doing there? He's alive. Why is one alive person in my ADC?" Well, every time that happened, and that's happened a few times, every time that happened, we were able to find out that that person had indeed died. So I have a lot of information like that, which is in my book, where information comes through. And again, it's just in bits and pieces. But anytime we did get new information, it always turned out to be true.
Alan, did anybody ever come to you for help because they were being haunted and they wanted it to stop, so they needed to communicate with that person, that spirit?
No, but I have a related story, which was I did an ADC with somebody a few years ago, and he had a wonderful ADC, but that night he experienced the deceased person coming back to him again, and he was spooked by that. And he came in and told me the next day that the ADC continued at night, and it made him feel very uncomfortable. And what I did is I instructed him, if that happens again, to tell the deceased that that he's uncomfortable with that, and the police not do that. So, and the deceased did come back, and he told the deceased that, and they stopped.
Let's go to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Good morning.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a question. Is can this be used to reach a part of your own self you feel has died? For example, in post-traumatic stress, you may be grieving that sense of your lost innocent self.
Yes.
Or in stressful current conditions, you feel you become cold and hard, and you're grieving the loss of that carefree, happy person you used to be.
Yeah.
That seems to have died.
There are a couple ways I can answer that question. First of all, if people feel like they lost their innocence and lost a part of them due to some life experience, the eye movement can help a person process whatever that trauma or life experience was that led them to feel that way. So it can be cleaned up indirectly like that. The other part of the my answer is that I have also done the used the same basic procedure to do what's called inner child work, where the person feels like they go back and assist, nurture, and help their younger self who sort of feel stuck being out there somewhere as a result of some negative life experiences.
So it's not that part of you has truly died. It's there somewhere it can be reached.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
And there's a long theory as to, you know, how this stuff might be working that I think could explain how those two things are similar. But the answer to your question, the easy answer is yes.
So you continue to do this, Alan? No needs of you to move on? You're not going to retire or anything?
Well, I early retired from the VA hospital.
Right.
So I could bring this information to the public. And right now I'm busy with a lot of projects. I've written a few articles for magazines. I've been interviewed for magazines. I have three documentary film producers who have already started filming. We don't have all the funding in place for a documentary, but hopefully we will have something like that in a year or two.
Very good. Alan, thanks for being on the program. Appreciate it, and good luck.
Well,
get your website out one more time.
It's always good talking with you.
Induced-ADC.com, right?
InducedADC.com.
The phones are ringing off the hook for him right now. As a matter of fact, for Steve Carr, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesur, Ross Mitchell, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.